We'll Let You Know, written and read by Doc Watson. The 10 Tommies were topping the bill at the Palace Theatre, Bath. Those 10 wounded soldiers were coming to Bath for a week and giving a special matinee for the patients and staff at the Bath War Hospital on the last Thursday in August 1917. So that afternoon, the theatre in the Saw Cross was packed to the rafters. Free journeys had been offered by the tramway company. Ambulances had been brought in from other hospitals and volunteers offered their cars. Everyone who could walk, hobble, limp or wheelchair had made their way down the hill to the Palace Theatre. By 3 o'clock, the stalls were full and extra chairs were being put out in the gangways. The circle was crammed so that some patients were either seated on the steps or standing at the back. The theatre manager, Mr. W.S. Pierce, was determined that no one should be turned away, while matron Amy Hill was concerned about possible emergencies. As her eyes scanned the rows of seats, she noticed one soldier in particular, a young Welshman from the Black Mountains. Now he should be on that stage, she thought, with his lilting voice, which was put to good use on Sundays in the makeshift chapel. His accent reminded Matron of her own upbringing in Radnorshire and her father's voice soaring above the rest of his congregation. It was good to see a smile on the young Welshman's lips, animation on his face, so different from the horrors of his nightmares, as each night he returned to Ypres, and the rain and the mud and the rotting corpses washed out of their resting places as torrents of water swirled away the sides of the trenches. But enough of that. The orchestra was playing the overture now. The lights in the auditorium were fading, the curtains on the stage were raising, and the show had begun. The first half was, as Matron had expected, the usual collection of singers, dancers and comedians. There was a specialty act, Mr. Johnny Fuller, on a high wire, although she could not for the life of her imagine why he was dressed as a cat. The final act of the first half was Miss Dora Dare, singer and dancer, with a knowing wink to the men and a flash of calf. The audience were on their feet, or rather those that could stand, calling for an encore, to which she charmingly obliged. During the interval, the theatre ushers and usherettes passed out cigarettes to the patients, compliments of the management. But few moved for the toilets, mainly because they were so squashed in that they could hardly move at all. If they needed to relieve themselves, Matron thought, they'd have to do their business where they sat. Mr. Pierce and his army of helpers would have to clean up the mess afterwards. By the end of the interval, there was a thick blue haze in the auditorium from the free cigarettes, and Matron Hill, who did not smoke and tried to dissuade her patients from doing so, wished she could escape from this, as the fumes caught her throat and stung her eyes. Then, once more, the auditorium lights dimmed and the second half of the show began. As the curtains parted, the audience were disappointed to see on stage not the 10 Tommies as billed, but the portly form of the manager, Mr. Pierce, beaming out from centre stage.
"Gentlemen!"
his voice boomed out, and the audience in fearful expectation fell to a hush.
"Gentlemen, it is with great pleasure and honour that we at the Palace Theatre, Bath, present for the first time in this fair city a company of brave wounded soldiers under the laudable leadership of Mr. Bert Danson. I mean, of course, the 10 Tommies."
The audience broke out into a spontaneous round of applause, expecting the manager to make way for those brave lads who had done their bit. But Mr. Pierce had not yet finished.
"These men have all served in France, Salonika, Gallipoli, serving their king and country. And when you see them, you well may doubt that they have ever been discharged. But I can assure you they have played their part in the big adventure."
"Get on with it,"
came a heckling voice from the darkness.
"To prove that they have been wounded, we have backstage their certificates of discharge for anyone to see.
On with the show!
Another voice cried. Indeed, continued Mr. Pierce, not to be stopped in mid-flow.
The 10 Tommies have produced their own pamphlet, in which you may learn more about those gallant soldiers, all for the price of tuppence, available from staff after the show, the proceedings of which go towards the local fund for wounded soldiers.
Even Matron Hill was by now wishing that he would indeed get off the stage.
And so, without further ado, I very proudly present our very own 10 Tommies.
The applause erupted and drowned out his final,
In sing, boys, sing!
With that, Mr. Pierce walked confidently off into the wings, and another set of curtains parted to reveal the interior of a YMCA hut, replete with a group of men dressed in blue Red Cross uniforms, arranged round an upright piano, at which a particularly gangly young man sat and began a rousing chorus of The Ragtime Fight, where ragtime bullets through the air shoot old Fritz in I Don't Care. The audience began singing the simple chorus and clapping along. This was followed by a few old favourites, Long Way to Tipperary and Keep the Home Fires Burning. After this, one of the company limped forward to explain that he had left his other foot behind in Gallipoli, and followed up with such a song and dance that Matron Hill wondered if he'd left any foot anywhere. The tempo changed again as the lights dipped to a single limelight, into which stepped another of the troupe, to give a robust rendering of the so-called true tale, My Pal Bill. Matron Hill could detect a whiff of sentimental melodrama rather than a drama from the front. Then, before the audience realised, the troupe were into their final number. Curtain calls were being made, and the house lights were up. Matron Hill had survived the ordeal, and was preparing to escape to high tea in St. James's Square with her sister, when the manager once more lumbered onto the stage.
"Gentlemen," he boomed, "as a special souvenir of this afternoon's performance, we have arranged for a photographer from the Bath Chronicle newspaper to come and take your photographs outside in the Saw Cross. The photographs will be in this Saturday's edition, so if you could all make your way to the exits, we shall arrange you into groups outside."
Matron Hill's heart fell. Would this never end? Actually, as they were all trained soldiers, they responded better at being given orders than being left to their own devices. The theatre ushers and the hospital sisters and nurses fell too, and soon three different groups were organised outside and three photographs taken. There were those too shy for such publicity, some too hungry to hang about, and so caught a quick tram up the hill to the hospital and dinner, and some too thirsty to give up the chance of a quick pint in one of the local hostelries, and one that had gone backstage to look for the 10 Tommies. Matron Hill suddenly realised that the young soldier was missing from the photograph line, and she was concerned. She expected to be stopped at the stage door, but the keeper was absent from his little cubbyhole, so she set off along a dark passage. She almost bumped into a woman hurrying out, a rather floozy woman still wearing crude stage makeup.
"Can you help me?" Matron said.
"I'll have a go, dear," said the woman, and in such close quarters Matron Hill realised that this was the young soubrette, Dora Dare, from earlier. "Got a rush to wet me whistle before the half."
"Mr. Bert Danson?"
"Down there on the left, dearie. You'll hear him before you sees him." Matron did hear a raised voice coming from a side passage.
"What the hell do you mean by it? How many times do you have to be told?"
She looked down the gloomy corridor and noticed someone huddled up outside the door.
"Don't think I can't get a replacement. There are hundreds of wounded soldiers out there. You're all ten a penny these days."
Matron Hill realised it was the Welsh soldier waiting outside the door, holding in his hand a folded piece of paper. The hectoring voice went on.
"Don't get in my limelight, Sonny Jim. I run this troop, and don't you forget it."
Suddenly the door was wrenched open.
and Mr. Bert Danson, all 5 feet 8 of him, writer, composer, London comedian, came storming out. The soldier backed away as the leader of the troop nearly walked straight into him. When Bert saw the uniform, his face instantly changed. Before murderous, now a wheedling smile crept over his lips.
"What do you want, son? An autograph?"
He went to reach for the piece of paper in the young man's hands.
The young man stammered. "Did you enjoy the show? Come again, on every night till Saturday. Then we're off into the wide blue yonder."
The soldier was uncertain what to do.
"Come on, son, haven't got all day, time and tide."
"I was wondering..." The Welsh lilt, the gentleness. He held out the folded paper. "If you are looking..."
"Always looking, never finding."
Mr. Bert Danson took the paper. "Autograph, is it? Got a pen? Got a pencil?" The boy couldn't stand it any longer. He turned away and started back up the corridor, only to find Matron blocking his way. He hesitated for a moment, wiped away his tears, and pushed past her and was gone. Matron was in two minds to follow, but decided to stay and face Mr. Bert Danson.
"You want an autograph, love?" "Oh, Matron, is it? Yes, I recognise the uniform from when I was invalided out."
"Really?" Matron caught his eyes and held them. "Where was that? The mud of Flanders? The beaches of Gallipoli?"
"Well, it wasn't quite..."
"No, it wasn't quite, was it, Mr. Danson? By the look of you and some of your men, I doubt if you were even sent abroad. Admittedly, some of your troop may have seen action, but I doubt if you all have."
"We are all wounded soldiers, every man jack of us."
"Soldiers, yes, but wounded? No."
"We have 100 days in hospital between us."
Mr. Bert Danson's voice had raised several octaves. "I have soldiers in the military hospital who have been there for more than 100 days, and who will have to face another 100 before we're able to let them rejoin their families. You are a malingerer, Mr. Danson, who puts himself over with such a sob story."
"Malingerer, indeed! I'll have you in court. That's a libel, that is. That's downright effrontery."
"However, I did not come here to quarrel with you."
"It don't seem like it,"
Mr. Danson muttered, having realised that he'd met his match. "And I have to admit," Matron continued, "your so-called entertainment brought a laugh or two to those patients out there this afternoon. It was certainly true for one young man. The young man that was here a few minutes ago. The young man who handed you that." And Matron Hill pointed to the piece of paper still in Mr. Bert Danson's hand. "I doubt he was asking you for an autograph. Rather, that young man was asking for a job. A job in your troop."
"Oh, well, we're always getting people coming backstage."
Matron Hill cut him off. "You will give him an audition."
"An audition?"
"You will send him a note in reply to this letter, offering to hear him sing tomorrow afternoon. Oh, he does have a fine voice, I can assure you. He would be more than a credit to your troop."
"Oh, I don't know about that."
"I do, Mr. Danson. And this is what you'll do." And with that, Matron gave Mr. Bert Danson strict instructions. She dictated a letter from him to the soldier, and she took it back with her to the hospital. So the next afternoon, the young soldier arrived at the stage door with his sheet music. He'd had a peaceful night's sleep. The horrors of war were replaced with a dream of footlights and applause. And he felt the audition went well. Mr. Danson seemed pleased.
"Well, son, that was good. That was very good. However, I have a full company at the moment, so I don't need an immediate replacement. And you wouldn't want me to sack one of those men in favour of you, now would you?"
"No, the soldier certainly wouldn't want that."
"So, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll keep your letter on file, and when an opening does occur, then we'll let you know."
The soldier went away, very happy. He caught the tram back up the hill to the hospital, and although the nightly horrors didn't go completely, they were not there every night. And as he told Matron,
"He was very pleased with me. So one day I could be called up to be a 10 Tommy. He did say, 'We'll let you know.'"
That was We'll Let You Know, written and read by Doc Watson.